Welcome, Weirdos! I'm Darren Marlar, and this is a bonus bite of Weird Dark News. AMC Networks and Complex Networks have announced a content partnership that combines AMC Networks' popular programming with the Complex Networks' pop culture, food, and fashion programming pillars. Looking to leverage the strength of food and fandoms, the partnership will kick off with a focus specifically around The Walking Dead. The first planned execution combines The Walking Dead universe with online food publication First We Feast to create the original series Run the Dish. Each episode of this unconventional cooking show will feature apocalypse-inspired dishes created by complex celebrity chefs and talent from The Walking Dead universe. First We Feast has become the number one brand in food entertainment, creating massive IP and extensions like Hot Ones, The Burger Show, Tacos Con Todo, and many others. Partnering with another iconic franchise with a rabid fan base like The Walking Dead made all the sense, according to Edgar Hernandez, Chief Revenue Officer for Complex Networks. When looking for our next strategic partnership, it made sense. Together, we'll create new content experiences that enable brand partners to go deep with our IP and fandoms. The collaboration comes as AMC looks to diversify its advertising opportunities in an evolving media landscape. We have original programming franchises that break through in popular culture and are focal points of vibrant and active fan communities, said Kim Granito, Executive Vice President of AMC Networks Content Room and Integrated Marketing. Through Complex Networks, we'll establish culture pillars. We're able to extend our viewers' relationships with these franchises in unexpected and highly entertaining ways. This is a powerful combination for our advertising partnership to tap into, and another point of quality and distinction the Content Room offers as we approach this year's advertising upfront. Details on specific talent, recipes, or premiere date of Run the Dish have not yet been revealed. The reports of Bigfoot sightings across Plano, Texas are not part of some strange conspiracy theory. They're the result of one man's effort to draw attention to his race for city council and give people a few laughs along the way. Bill Lyle, one of five candidates for Place 7, said that he came up with the idea of using statues of the hairy, ape-like legend for his campaign signs several months ago when he started to plan his run. "It's an opportunity to show your creativity and ability to problem-solve," Lyle said. The 7-foot brown metal statues of Bigfoot, aka Sasquatch, have the words "Bill Lyle for 7" in white lettering down the center. Lyle had two previous unsuccessful runs for Plano City Council in 2017 and 2019. His opponents in this year's race who have more traditional signs are Julie Holmer, a small business owner, Chris Robertson, a middle school teacher and veteran, David M. Smith, who previously served on the council for 3 terms, and Sandeep Srivastava, a real estate consultant. So why Bigfoot? Lyle, who owns a real estate company and a Plano landscaping firm, said it's fun and something people can relate to and recognize. He said he gets questions daily about where he gets the Sasquatches and how much they cost. He bought them from CIMA Wholesale Marketplace in Canton for about $100 each, a price that can vary based on demand and availability, he said. "I'm going to have Sasquatches large, small, and tiny to drive more interest," Lyle said. "The big Sasquatches will have a family with them." Election Day is May 1st. Early voting starts April 19th. Speaking of Bigfoot in a completely different state, an Oklahoma state representative came up with one of the most strange tourism promotions to attract visitors to southeast Oklahoma. State Representative Justin Humphrey recently proposed a bill to allow people to capture the mythical Bigfoot, which does not really exist, at least according to science. The bill first asked the state to set aside $25,000 as a bounty to anyone who catches it. But earlier this month, Humphrey said the bounty ballooned to over $2 million. The Republican politician's bill never made it out of committee debates, but he told CNHI Oklahoma on March 3rd that it still did what he wanted it to do. News of his bill promoted interest in southeast Oklahoma, which he claims has the 9th most sightings of Bigfoot in the world. Humphrey thought he would need to work with the state wildlife department to issue hunting licenses, but he learned that he could go through the state tourism department. They can issue tracking permits since the hunters are asked to capture Bigfoot, not kill it. Next, Humphrey hopes state tourism officials can help him set up Sasquatch Quest rules for Bigfoot believers. While the first rule of Fight Club is to never talk about Fight Club, the first rule of this quest is to make sure Bigfoot is captured unharmed and no other laws are broken. We've got to get some language, make sure that we protect Bigfoot and that we protect the public so that nobody is injured, Humphrey said. At first, Humphrey wanted the bounty to be just $25,000, with the state funding the project. However, movie producers have pledged about $2 million and another private business offered $100,000. That means the state will no longer have to fund the bounty. With the funding concerns out of the way, Humphrey told CNHI Oklahoma the state tourism board is already working on a Bigfoot marketing campaign that will include decals, tracking licenses, license plates, and even Bigfoot checkout stations. They're also printing maps to show tourists the best places where Bigfoot sightings have been recorded. Proceeds will go to maintain Oklahoma's lakes, parks, and roadways. "We're having fun with it," Humphrey explained. "It's a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it. But at the same time, I know a lot of people thought I was crazy. But I think if people chill out, they could see that this could be a serious deal bringing in a lot of money, a lot of tourism." While Lieutenant Governor Matt Pinnell, who also serves as the state's Secretary of Tourism and Branding, said no legislation would be needed for this idea, he has some understandable reservations. "We were concerned with this idea of sending people into the woods to trap a Bigfoot," Pinnell explained. "We certainly didn't want to harm any individuals or Bigfoots, for that matter." Kentucky residents were likely either amused or bewildered by an official-looking notice that made the rounds on social media and cautioned that Bigfoot had been spotted near the state's waterways. Yep, we have another state and another Bigfoot sighting. The odd announcement reportedly popped up on several localized social media groups earlier this month and, as such strange posts tend to do, wound up being shared widely by people online. Emblazoned with the official logo of the Kentucky Department of Fish and Wildlife Resources, the cleverly crafted but ultimately bogus bulletin supposedly served as a Sasquatch warning. According to the tale weaved by the warning, the famed cryptid had been spotted coming from the woodlands to the lakes, rivers, and other waterways to feed on fish, crawdads, vegetation, and other food sources, and made available by way of heavy rainfall and flooding. The announcement also offers some fairly sound advice should one encounter a Bigfoot, including that they should remain calm and not chase after the Sasquatch, but do take note of the location and, if possible, photograph the elusive creature. It also claims that Sasquatches are peaceful animals that will not harm humans, which is an assertion that we'd rather not see put to the test. Since the warning appeared online at around the same time that a genuine state of emergency was declared because of the aforementioned flooding, it's understandable how some Kentucky residents might actually believe that Bigfoot was seen roaming the area. Of course, that was not the case, and the state's Department of Fish and Wildlife Resource quickly squashed the Sasquatch rumor, indicating that the warning was fake and local police departments to not share the notice online. The U.S. Forest Service was forced to issue a similar statement back in 2018 when a prankster produced an announcement proclaiming that officials in Montana were on the lookout for Bigfoot following a series of sightings. UFO encounters of the automobile kind are common. Besides the many reports of engines and lights suddenly malfunctioning, there are some more famous and intimate auto encounters, like the 1979 incident in Minnesota by Deputy Sheriff Val Johnson, whose damaged car is now in a museum, or the 1969 incident in Sheffield, Massachusetts, when Tom Reed and his family reported being abducted from their car, a UFO encounter honored by the state governor as historically significant and true. On the other hand, UFO encounters of the motorcycle kind are pretty rare. In fact, if anyone else has had one, Richard Mayombo might want to talk to you about what happened to him recently in Zimbabwe, an incident that left him and his two wheels reeling. "I was traveling home on my motorbike at around 9 a.m. when I witnessed a strange light traveling in the sky. I tried to concentrate on riding, but what made me fall was the sound that followed after the light. I then fell on the bike due to panic. I thought I was dying." Richard Mayombo, a resident of the Chipinge Safari area in eastern Zimbabwe near the Mozambique border, told local media the object looked like a rocket with fire on its back and that the sound was deafening. "Mayombo knows what you're thinking. I was 100% sober," he says, "but I was so confused because I thought I had encountered those strange things people see in dark and thick forests." The Chipinge Safari area sounds more like a place for a Bigfoot encounter in a dark park. While no one else was knocked off of their bikes by the UFO, Biombo suffered a leg injury that did require a hospital visit. There were other witnesses who reported the incident, including Charles Mukaduyu, who claimed that he saw the UFO drop fast, explode into flames, and hit the ground with an audible thud. Vallistus Magorwa told local media it looked like a star heading eastward across the sky, but the sound was more than a thud. "It was a frightening explosion-like sound," he said. "It also sounded like rain thunder despite the clear sky." ZBC News reported other unnamed witnesses reported a bright light resembling the collision of two stars, a huge blow sound, and the ground shaking. Add all of those up and it sounds more like a meteorite than a UFO. In fact, the District Meteorological Services Department confirmed that it witnessed something that issued no official statement as of this time. It'd be easy to chalk this one up to a meteorite, an encounter close enough to knock a man off of his motorbike, but any discussion of Zimbabwe and UFOs always leads to the 1994 incident when 62 children at aerial school in Rua, 6 hours from Chipinge, reported seeing a shiny flying disc and speaking telepathically with aliens. No one was knocked off their bikes or tricycles or seesaws, but the children are now adults and continue to stick to their story. Did their aliens come back, maybe, to check up on them? Probably not. This is on the meteorite side of the explanation dial, unless more witnesses or some photos turn up. If you're heading to Zimbabwe to look for Mayambo's UFO, you might want to wear a helmet. Declassified documents from the Pentagon reveal the Department of Defense funded projects that investigated UFOs, wormholes, alternate dimensions, and a host of other subjects that are often the topics of conspiracy theorists. The Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA, released 38 research titles following a Freedom of Information Act request from Stephen Aftergood, director of the Federation of American Scientists Project on Government Secrecy. The research was funded by the Department of Defense under its Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, or ATIP. Some of the more interesting projects include invisibility cloaking, traversable wormholes, stargates and negative energy, warp drive, dark energy, and the manipulation of extra dimensions, and an introduction to the statistical Drake equation. The DOD and the DIA have previously sought to spin ATIP as being a program looking at foreign advanced aerospace weapons threats, but the attachment to the DIA's letter to Congress is difficult to reconcile with this given that the products produced under the ATIP contract are listed as including reference papers on topics which seem more concerned with space travel, according to Nick Pope, a former employee at the British government's Ministry of Defense. Pope continued with saying, "The smoking gun is the paper about the Drake equation, which is used to estimate the number of civilizations in the universe. This supports the suggestion that ATIP was indeed a UFO program, as has been claimed, and not an aviation program looking at aircraft, drones, and missiles." The Drake equation is a 7-term equation that attempts to look at the different variables that would be relevant for intelligent life forms. This includes factors such as formed stars and their planets, the average number of planets that can potentially support life. Other factors include a fraction of those planets that can develop life and a fraction of these civilizations that have become intelligent. Some of the projects give details such as who was working on them. Dr. Eric Davis of EarthTech International participated in the Wormhole Project, for instance, but others are left with scant details. The project, titled Metallic Glasses, says Dr. Todd Huffnagel from Johns Hopkins University worked on the research, but it could mean anything. I think anyone who looks at these titles will scratch their heads and wonder what on earth the Defense Intelligence Agency was thinking, Aftergood said in an interview with Motherboard. These are the kind of topics you pursue when you have more money than you know what to do with. The existence of ATIP was initially described by the New York Times and Politico in 2017. It was subsequently reported on by Fox News and a number of other news outlets, due in large part to its investigation into the existence of UFOs at the urging of former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. Following the Times report, Reid tweeted, "The truth is out there," a nod to the show The X-Files, adding that if anyone says they have the answers, they're fooling themselves. Both The Times and Politico said Reid's interest in UFOs was the result of friend and donor Bob Bigelow, who owns Bigelow Aerospace and has said before he is absolutely convinced aliens exist and UFOs have visited Earth. The New York Times said ATIP had a $22 million annual budget, and most of the money went to Bigelow's research company, which hired subcontractors and solicited research for the program. A Pentagon spokesman said the UFO program ended in 2012, though the New York Times said the Defense Department still investigates potential episodes of unidentified flying objects. The former UFO program chief at the Pentagon, Luis Elizondo, detailed the three leading theories on where UFOs originated from and the five defining characteristics of UFOs that break the United States' current understanding of the laws of physics. During an appearance on Fox & Friends, Elizondo, the former director of ATIP, Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, said that the United States government applied the same methodology used in terrorism intel operations in regards to UFOs and found that they are not only real, but the information surrounding them is compelling. The Pentagon has presented three potential theories on the origins of UFOs. The first highly unlikely theory purports that UFOs are secret U.S. technology that has flown under the radar due to a lack of communication between government agencies. The second theory speculates that UFOs are foreign adversarial technology created without the intelligence of the U.S. government. This would be a huge intelligence failure of the United States because it would mean that we were technologically leapfrogged, said Elizondo. Elizondo stopped short of concluding that UFOs could be alien technology when discussing the third and final theory. If it's not ours and it's not another country, well, then it's someone or something else. Elizondo also outlined the five unique observables that help to distinguish UFOs from other identifiable aerospace technology. These characteristics include instantaneous acceleration, hypersonic velocity, low observability, transmedium travel, the ability to operate in various environments, and positive lift, in which you have vehicles that can fly without the apparent need for control surfaces, wings, or even engines. We are seeing these, let's call them vehicles, if you will, that are incurring into controlled U.S. airspace that are displaying performance characteristics that are frankly well beyond anything we can either replicate or in some cases really even understand, Elizondo said. In January, by the way of the Freedom of Information Act, thousands of the CIA documents on unidentified flying objects, or unidentified aerial phenomena, as the government calls them, became accessible via download at the Black Vault, a website operated by author and podcaster John Greenwald Jr. The CIA claims that they have now provided all the information on UAPs they have, though there's no way to know that's true. Another report that could be released as early as June will detail never-before-seen and difficult-to-explain UFO sightings, according to John Ratcliffe, the former director of National Intelligence. New details are alleged in a filing in the Butler County, Ohio Court of Common Pleas this week in the case of a Middletown woman accused of killing her young son and disposing of his body in the Ohio River. Prosecutors say three siblings were initially abandoned in a parking lot before the boy was killed and that the children had been bound and gagged leading up to the incident. Prosecutors also allege a concrete block was tied around the dead boy's body before his remains were dropped in the river. Brittany Gosney, 29, was arrested in February on charges of murder, abuse of a corpse, and tampering with evidence after she reported her 6-year-old son James Hutchinson missing. Investigators said Gosney drove her son and two of his siblings to a wildlife area parking lot in Preble County, intending to leave him there, and accused her of running the child over when he tried to get back into the vehicle. She was alleged to have driven away, then to have returned 30 to 40 minutes later to retrieve the boy's body. She then disposed of the boy's body in the Ohio River with the help of her boyfriend, according to police. According to Middletown police, Brittany Gosney confessed to killing her youngest child on February 26th. The Cincinnati Inquirer reports that in a court filing in Butler County, Ohio this week, prosecutors allege Gosney drove to the Rush Run Wildlife Area in Preble County in a minivan and left all three children on February 26th. The other two siblings are reportedly ages 7 and 9 years old. The Preble County Sheriff's Office said Gosney allegedly left the children in the parking lot under pressure from her boyfriend James Hamilton, 43. After leaving the three children in the parking lot, prosecutors allege Gosney returned 40 minutes later and picked up James Hutchison and the other two siblings who were not identified, according to WXIX-TV. Gosney and Hamilton put the dead boy's body in a room in their house for about 48 hours, according to court records. The couple drove the boy's body to Lawrenceburg, Indiana, about 50 miles away, and allegedly tied a concrete block to the body before throwing it into the Ohio River, according to prosecutors. This allegedly occurred about 3 a.m. on February 28th. The boy's body had not been found as of March 24th. authorities continue to search for his remains. Gosney and Hamilton removed the hard drive from video cameras at their residence and other evidence and hid them, according to prosecutors. Gosney and Hamilton had hogtied all three children by their hands and feet and put clothes or clothing in their mouths and left them for hours before the boys' death, with purpose to terrorize and/or inflict serious harm to the children. Brittany Gosney was charged with murder, endangering children, involuntary manslaughter, abuse of a corpse, tampering with evidence, kidnapping, and abduction. Hamilton was charged with kidnapping, abduction, abuse of a corpse, and tampering with evidence. In total, they have 31 indictments against the two of them. Gosney has pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity. Gosney's been ordered by the court to undergo a psychological evaluation. A competency evaluation hearing was set for April 26th. Republican Senator Marco Rubio of Florida indicated that there have been several instances in which unidentified aircraft have flown directly over U.S. military bases and the government still has no clue what they were or who was operating them. "There's stuff flying over military installations and no one knows what it is and it isn't ours," Rubio, who sits on the Senate Intelligence Committee, told TMZ in an impromptu interview at the Reagan National Airport in Arlington, Virginia. "So for me, that's logical, that you want to know what it is," the senator continued. "I mean, it's common sense, right? If stuff is flying over the top of your most sensitive installations and it's not ours and no one knows whose it is, you should find out what it is and tell us." On March 25th at 2100 hours, many residents of the American state of Washington witnessed the entry of an unknown space object into the dense layers of the Earth's atmosphere. The fall of a large space object was accompanied by a fiery show of debris which burned up when passing through dense layers of air. The official authorities cannot yet explain what fell from space and collapsed in the atmosphere over Washington. If this is space debris and a spacecraft entered the atmosphere, then its deorbiting was uncontrollable. In addition, the official authorities at NASA did not warn the population of the state about the impending fall of this large object, which means that the U.S. Space Defense Command did not know about its deorbiting or fall into the Washington state. So what fell from the sky? A former U.S. National Intelligence Director has claimed that a report will be released soon declassifying several difficult-to-explain UFO sightings. "There are instances where we don't have good explanations for some of the things that we've seen, and when that information becomes declassified, I'll be able to talk a little bit more about that," former Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe told Fox News. John Ratcliffe, who spent 8 months as the Trump administration's intelligence director, spoke to the U.S. media ahead of an upcoming government report on unidentified aerial phenomena. "Frankly, there are a lot more sightings than have been made public," he said. "Some of those have been declassified. And when we talk about sightings, we're talking about objects that have been seen by Navy or Air Force pilots, or have been picked up by satellite imagery that, frankly, engage in actions that are difficult to explain, movements that are hard to replicate, that we don't have the technology for." Ratcliffe said elements that are hard to explain in these unreleased sightings include movements that are hard to replicate or traveling at speeds that exceed the sound barrier without creating a sonic boom. The report is expected to be released on June 1st. "We always look for a plausible application," Ratcliffe said. "Sometimes we wonder whether our adversaries have technologies that are a little bit further down the road than we thought or that we realized. But there are instances where we don't have any good explanations. So in short, things that we are observing that are difficult to explain, and so there's actually quite a few of those, and I think that info has been gathered and will be put out in a way the American people can see." Asked by Fox News where the unidentified phenomena were sighted, Ratcliffe replied, "Actually, all over the world. There have been sightings all over the world." The popular name for it is D'Amica Pania. When self-proclaimed healer D'Amica Bandera announced late last year that he had discovered an herbal remedy that would not only cure COVID-19 but also provide lifelong immunity to the disease, he became an overnight sensation in Sri Lanka. According to Bandera, he learned how to create his life-giving syrup from a dream in which the goddess Kali appeared to him and told him how to save the world. Though all the ingredients remain a mystery, social media suggests that most of them, including honey and nutmeg, can be found in any household. While cases of COVID-19 have been relatively stable in Sri Lanka for most of 2020, the number of new infections began rising sharply in October. According to World Health Organization statistics, known coronavirus cases have risen from 3,380 with 13 deaths in early October to 22,988 with 109 deaths by the end of November. Latest statistics put in close to 90,000. As a result, COVID anxiety rose to all-time highs in Sri Lanka and left the public strongly receptive to Bandara's claims. Despite being hailed as an Ayurvedic physician by his supporters, there was no real evidence that the one-time stonemason had any actual training in medicine, something that mainstream medical practitioners and Ayurvedic healers were quick to point out. Despite warnings about Bandara's Wonder Elixir, which has been officially classified as a food supplement, demand rose sharply when Sri Lanka's health minister, Pavithra Wanirachchi, openly endorsed him and was even photographed sipping a spoonful of his elixir. Numerous other government legislators did the same. All of which led to thousands of Sri Lankans flocking to Kigal, the town where Bandara lives, while ignoring the country's social distancing regimen to get their own supply of the elixir. How many of these miracle seekers ended up being infected as a result of their enthusiasm may never be known. Granted, Bandara is not the first miracle worker that Wanirachchi endorsed. In November, she dropped a pot of miracle water into the country's Kalu River after another self-styled prophet, Eliantha White, promised that the water he blessed could end the spread of the virus across the country. She was so confident in his claim that she publicly pulled off her mask after the pot ceremony and insisted she and her security details would be protected, which has led to considerable embarrassment, given that Wanirachchi has recently been diagnosed with coronavirus herself and has since gone into isolation along with several other government figures who had also endorsed Bandara's elixir. Even as the government continues its drive to immunize the country's population, the suspicion that many people in Sri Lanka have towards Western medicine will likely do little to discourage the quest for miracle cures. As for Bandara himself, he is dealing with his own legal woes as he faces assault charges after allegedly attacking a doctor who dared to argue with him at his Kigali home. Police are still investigating. Cornell University engineers have created an artificial material that has three key traits of life – metabolism, self-assembly, and organization. The engineers were able to pull off such a feat by using DNA in order to make machines from biomaterials that would have characteristics of alive things. Dubbing their process DASH for DNA-based assembly and synthesis of hierarchical materials, the science made a DNA material that has metabolism, the set of chemical processes that convert food into energy necessary for the maintenance of life. The goal for the scientists is not to create a life form, but a machine with lifelike characteristics, with Dan Luo, professor of biological and environmental engineering, pointing out, "We're not making something that's alive, but we are creating materials that are much more lifelike than have ever been seen before." The major innovation here is the programmed metabolism that is coded into the DNA materials. The set of instructions for metabolism and autonomous regeneration allows the material to grow on its own. In their paper, the scientists describe the metabolism as the system by which the materials comprising life are synthesized, assembled, dissipated, and decomposed autonomously in a controlled, hierarchical manner using biological processes. To keep going, a living organism must be able to generate new cells, while discarding old ones and waste. It is this process that the Cornell scientists duplicated using DASH. They devised a biomaterial that can arise on its own from nanoscale building blocks. It can arrange itself into polymers first and into mesoscale shapes afterwards. The DNA molecules in the materials were duplicated hundreds of thousands of times, resulting in chains of repeating DNA that were a few millimeters in length. The solution with the reaction was injected into a special microfluidic device that facilitated biosynthesis. This flow washed over the materials, causing DNA to synthesize its own strands. The material even had its own locomotion, with the front end growing while the tail end was degrading, making it creep forth. This fact allowed the researchers to have portions of the materials competing against each other. The designs are still primitive, but they showed a new route to create dynamic machines from biomolecules. "We are at a first step of building lifelike robots by artificial metabolism," explained Shogo Hamada, the lead and co-corresponding author of the paper, as well as a lecturer and research associate in the Luo lab. "Even from a simple design, we were able to create sophisticated behaviors like racing. Artificial metabolism could open a new frontier in robotics." The material that was created lasted for 2 cycles of synthesis and degradation, but the longevity can be extended, think the researchers. This could lead to more generations of the material, eventually resulting in a lifelike, self-reproducing machine, said Hamada. He also foresees that the system can result in a self-evolutionary possibility. Next for the material, the engineers are looking at how to get it to react to stimuli and be able to seek out light or food all on its own. They also want to be able to avoid harmful stimuli. You can check out the new paper, Dynamic DNA Material with Eminent Locomotion Behavior Powered by Artificial Metabolism, in the April 10th issue of Science Robotics. A body found in an Ohio couple's home in December has been identified as the woman's 19-year-old son, who'd been missing since September, the Hamilton County Coroner's Office announced on Monday. WXIX-TV reported Dominic Allen was reported missing after he had last been seen September 26, 2020. Allen's mother, Kenya Stallworth, and her husband, Robert Robb, were arrested in December after authorities discovered a corpse concealed in their house on Fenton Avenue. A complaint filed on December 5th says John Doe died in the bedroom of the home and that Stallworth and Robb tried to hide the body by placing clothing on the deceased, sealing the bedroom, and attempting to dissipate any odors while allowing the body to decompose. The Hamilton County coroner on Tuesday said DNA testing was used to identify Dominic Allen's body. Authorities believe Allen died on or around September 26th. His cause of death has not been released. Kenya Stallworth, 39, and Robert Robb, 35, are charged with gross abuse of a corpse. Stallworth is also charged with tampering with evidence. Cincinnati police said the investigation was continuing and further charges were possible. She waited 10 days to file a police report. Then she stated she wasn't going to file a report because she thought I was going to do it, Dominic's father, Marcus Allen, said. Marcus Allen said he talked to a friend of his son's friend who told him that he hadn't seen Dominic since September 24th. A Florida mother is facing charges after allegedly fighting a student on a middle school campus, according to First Coast News. The police report said 34-year-old Edith Riddle of Jacksonville was arrested by Duval School Board Police on Thursday, March 18th. An announcement came over the school radio about a fight happening outside the cafeteria at 12:14 p.m. A school safety officer arrived at the scene and found that Riddle was reportedly involved in a physical fight with the victim. Police said Riddle just left the school with her daughter after meeting with the vice principal. The daughter then walked through the cafeteria to engage the victim in a fight, the report said. Riddle's daughter pushed the victim to the ground and threw some punches before the suspect also joined in punching the victim, who was lying on the ground, according to witnesses. A witness also said Riddle appeared to have a boxing glove attached to her left hand, according to the arrest report. Riddle reportedly had the boxing glove on her hand when she arrived at the school and told police that it was superglued to her wrist and she couldn't remove it. The report said the female victim suffered abrasions to her knees and forearms. Police added that the victim was taken to St. Vincent's Hospital for a follow-up evaluation. The victim's parents told police she wanted to press criminal charges as well. Riddle was arrested and charged with 1 count of child abuse with personal special weapon. And finally, Arnold Schwarzenegger should be put in charge if aliens ever invade our planet, according to 2,000 adults in Great Britain. The Terminator star and ex-California governor topped the list of 20 celebrities and public figures in a British survey of who would be best equipped to handle the doomsday scenario, with Will Smith coming in at number 2. Both actors are known for their kick-butt movie roles in which they battle bizarre creatures, but apparently Arnold's political experience as governor gave him the edge over Smith's film experience in Independence Day and Men in Black. Rounding out the top 5 on the list were beloved Brit Sir David Attenborough, followed by Bruce Willis and Tom Cruise. Ex-President Donald Trump was the top current politician at number 8, just behind Harrison Ford and Alien star Sigourney Weaver. The bad news for British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is the UK survey put him all the way down at number 12. Apparently, the polled Brits have even less faith, though, in America's current administration when it comes to handling aliens. VP Kamala Harris came in at number 19, while President Biden was last at number 20. The Blaze TV channel that commissioned the survey says Arnold is a strong top choice, but adds, "It's worrying to see that so many celebrities with fictional alien experience are considered by many to be better candidates than our current crop of world leaders." The same study also found 11% of the adults surveyed believe they have seen a UFO. An update to the story, Arnold has commented, weighing in on the vote, saying, "I want to thank the people for putting their faith in me. I am ready to serve." Thanks for listening. For more Bonus Bites, as well as other stories of the strange and paranormal, visit us online at WeirdDarkness.com. I'm Darren Marlar.